AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's RUBRIK.com.
Absolute Radio Country is filled with the best sounds from Nashville 24 hours a day. But even we can't fit in everything. You'll find the full story right here. This is Country Music Talk, the podcast that takes you behind the scenes of the world of country music.
We love bringing you the biggest names from the world of country music here on the podcast, so thank you for listening. Remember to subscribe if you haven't already, and that way you'll never miss an episode. And if you're in the UK, you can listen to Absolute Radio Country live and enjoy the No Repeat Guarantee. It's our promise to never play the same song twice during your workday between 9 to 5, Monday to Friday. Right, on with the podcast.
This is the Country Music Talk Podcast from Absolute Radio Country.
Stephen Wilson Jr., welcome back.
Thank you, Baylen. Good to be back.
I feel like you're an old friend around these parts now.
Mm-hmm. A home away from home.
Do you feel it when you come back?
I do, yeah.
Good.
We've had such a wonderful welcome back. So,
well, you clearly early on, or maybe not clearly, maybe it's just by happenstance, decided like, yeah, UK, I got you, you got me, let's do this. Because you've been over quite a few times, and you must see not only like the nice welcome that you receive back, which is always lovely, and it's always great to see familiar faces and old friends, but new friends as well. Like each time you come over, more and more people are coming out.
Yeah, I know. We have new friends every show. And I mean, my first tour ever was in the UK.
Was it?
As an artist. Because, you know, I kind of came out of the pandemic. I kind of started my artist career in 2020, a great time to start your artist career.
Yeah, good timing.
Yep. And so nobody was touring and nobody was playing shows. And Brothers Osborne asked me to do their first tour out of the gate of COVID, but it's over here in the UK, and they asked me to be direct support. And, yeah, so my very first tour as Stephen Wilson Jr. on a bill, on a tour, my first show was in Birmingham, England. So, yeah.
And that first show, did you feel like you knew what you were doing?
No, I still don't.
That's the best way to be, I think.
I don't plan on figuring it out either.
No, I think sometimes the less you know, the better, mm-hmm. you know? Because sometimes when you know too much, then you think, oh, I'm supposed to do it this way.
Yeah.
And I've been doing it this way.
Yeah, I learned that from my microbiology years. I wish I could go back and unlearn what I learned.
Oh, I bet. Yeah.
Ignorance is bliss.
Hey, you brought up microbiology. Actually, Dierks Bentley, we were talking to him when he was over because you guys had just done that song together called Beer Can. And we were talking about you and he was just, you know, as we all are, dazzled by your multiple talents in your microbiology career. So if we're going like boxer, scientist, son, songwriter, what order are we putting those in?
Probably boxer first, because that's, you know, just the order of operations. I started fighting at age 7 and started training at age 7. I fought my first fight at age 7, so...
How old was the other person?
6.
Okay, fine.
It was my brother.
Right, okay.
Yeah, it was an exhibition fight. That's what we call those. And then eventually they became competitive fights. And but we would open up for the adults. I've been an opener for a long time. And so the kids would open up for the adults. It was just like a show. It was a card.
Yeah.
You know, you just had X amount of fights, just like you had X amount of bands on a card. And we were direct support, and we would beat the hell out of each other, and that's kind of where it all began. If I have any skill sets, it was all rooted in boxing, because I was such a shy kid.
Right.
Very insecure. And so for me to do all of this, fast forward years later, if I hadn't been a boxer, I'm not sure I would have done any of this.
Really?
From going to school and paying my way through school, it just, once you, like, step in a ring and... Because I eventually grew up, into adulthood boxing, and then you start fighting men, like young men, and then you start fighting men, and that's when it starts getting real serious. And it's a very high-pressure, intense operation to put yourself under. And
but also mental. I mean, a lot of people, I think, maybe just think about the physical aspect of it, but mentally as well.
Yeah, that's really what I'm more referring to, is the mental pressure that you undergo just to step in the ring. Mm. And so really that kind of prepared me for all of this, because once you fight another man, win or lose, it's, you know, paying your way through college and getting a microbiology degree as a poor kid from Southern Indiana doesn't seem too far-fetched anymore. Mm. You just fought a dude. Like, what, you know, and then getting on stage and playing guitar and singing in front of people, which used to, the idea of it would petrify me. But I fought a dude.
Yeah.
So once you fight a dude in front of a bunch of people.
In your underwear, yeah.
In your underwear, and, you know, and win or lose, whatever, it really sets the tone for what you could do. My dad believed in me way more than I believed in myself, and him teaching me to box first, I think, was just the foundation for everything in my life.
Son of Dad, the deluxe edition. That's the most recent release we had from you. Dig a Hole is a new, well, it is a single, but it was for a television show, right?
Correct, yeah.
What's the television show?
It's called Waterfront, yeah.
And how does that work? Do they go, does a song exist, and then they go, that'll be perfect for this? Or do the show exist, and they go, hey, Stephen Wilson Jr., put down your boxing gloves, write us a song for this?
Well, yeah, we were actually writing for a show, and it ended up not getting used for that show, but it was very much, we were trying to, but we were also writing a song. I don't really write, like, for TV.
Right.
I just write songs, and if the song works for TV, cool. Mm. So we really just set out to write a song, and that was it. And then it just so happened to get picked up for that show, and it ended up not getting used for the show that we originally wrote it for, but the themes seemed to cross over quite well, and I was very proud of the song, so releasing it as a single made a lot of sense too, because I really just love the song.
Right.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
One thing that I know, because we've talked before about kind of our upbringings and whether the religious similarities or just the poverty of it all, the one thing that I always had drilled into me was, like, you get a good job, you keep it, because you never know when you can get another one. And you had a really good job. Mm-hmm. And decided then, well, actually, I'm going to go into a really unstable career of music, which has obviously worked out very well for you. But was there a moment where you thought, well, I've got a job, I can pay my bills, I'm not bored, or were you bored?
No, I wasn't bored. That kept me very busy.
Mm.
Yeah. And I was still writing songs and stuff too. But that was one of the hardest decisions I ever made as an adult, is quitting that job to go write songs for nobody, for no money.
And is this the product development scientist for Mars?
Yes.
Which is not the planet.
Not the planet.
As discussed with producer Adam before you came in, but the candy bar.
Yeah.
What made you quit this job?
It was a number of factors. When I first started going into that job, and it was an incredible job, a great company to work for, great environment. Free candy bars, had all the benefits that you could look for. Literally every box that an employee would want to check off, they checked off. And I was really, really proud to get that job. It's a very hard job to get, and I worked really hard to get it, not just through college, but just I worked there as a contractor before they gave me a proper salary job. And when I started going there, I was always writing songs. That was like what I did on the side. I got to the point where I could kind of pipette with one hand and work in the lab and write with the other. And I had this really great colleague there, he could tell that my true passion was in songwriting, but I was good at this job. And he pulled me aside and he used this really powerful metaphor of, he said, they're about to put the golden handcuffs on you. Mm-hmm. And that was really effective usage of words. I don't really care for handcuffs, no matter what material they are made of. And he really described it perfectly, like, you're going to climb here at this company, but the more you go, the less of likelihood that this dream of yours of being a songwriter is ever going to materialize. And I don't even know if you want it to materialize. Maybe you just want to do this on the side. And he's like, do you want it to materialize? And he's like, if you could choose anything. I said, yeah, I do. He's like, cool. Well, you're at a crossroads in your life. You're going to have to blow up your world if you want to be a songwriter. Are you willing to blow up your world? And at that moment, I didn't have an answer. But what I did know is every time I'd walk in that office from day one, I describe it as a feeling you could hear. I had this feeling, and it was very quiet when I first walked in there. And after a year, it started to get louder. After 2 years, it got even louder, and 3 years. And before I quit there, it was like a roar, and it was kind of driving me crazy. And then the golden handcuffs conversation happened. He didn't really know about this feeling I could hear, but it came at a good time. So I had a lot to think about after that conversation. And what really made me make the decision, because if I could translate the feeling that I could hear into English, it was kind of like a frequency or something. It said, you're not supposed to be here. That's literally all it said. It didn't give me a reason why or why not. It just said that. And that's what I knew it said. And so, like, you're not supposed to be here just got louder and louder. And my biggest fear was, you know, I started doing scenario planning, as a scientist does. And it's like, well, I'm not scared of quitting this job and blowing up my world. That does scare me. But what scares me the most, and I started figuring out, what worried and scared me the most was one day potentially walking in that office and the feeling that I could hear was gone. Even though it was driving me crazy and it was roaring, like, if one day it gave up on me, that would have devastated me. Like, more than anything, more than quitting the job, more than failing at music, more than all of it. That's what made the decision, is that scenario, the potential of that scenario.
I think it's fair to say it's worked out for you.
Maybe, yeah, but there was great sacrifice. You know, I waited tables for years. I really got drug across the gravel, especially leaving the comforts of a corporate world.
Yeah.
There were nights when I waited on my old colleagues that I used to work with. Like, oh, how's the music thing going? You know,
that's tough.
Would you like some more unsweet tea?
Yeah.
Like, you know, I had a lot of tough, like, very humbling experiences through all of it. It did not come without great stressors, and I wrote every day, and I worked every night. I was working like 80 hours a week for 3 years until this guy named Chris Oglesby from BMG heard one of my weird songs, because, like, I couldn't get a publishing deal from anybody. I couldn't even get meetings because my songs were just, this was 2016, and the music business was different in 2016 in Nashville, and my songs were, what they say, different. And it wasn't commercial and it wasn't attractive.
But nothing different works until it does.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, there's always a mold that you're not supposed to break out of until somebody does and it works. And then suddenly everybody's wanting a Stephen Wilson Jr. song.
Oh, well, it's to say nobody wanted one then.
Right.
And Chris Oglesby was one of the first, if not the only ones that literally saw that, what you just said. And he literally told me verbatim, he said, I think you're 5 to 7 years ahead of everybody. And I think you're going to be one of the best songwriters in this town. It's going to be like 5 to 7 years from now. And, like, now let's get to work. And I was like, okay.
You are one of those artists. You're like an artist. You must know this, even if you're too humble to talk about it. Every artist references you. You are, as Chapel Roan would say, everybody's favorite artist. And that must be a really lovely position to be in. Whether or not, you know, you can admit that out loud or not, I just want to say that's that gives hope to a lot of people who are having a voice roar in their head that they're trying to ignore. And I think that's a lovely thing.
Oh, well, thank you, Baylen. That's incredibly high praise, because there's so much great art out there. And if I have had any influence on any of that, that blows my mind.
You have. You have. Hey, you know, you were talking about waiting on colleagues. Is it work? Because I had a moment where this happened to me as well. And I'd be waiting tables to just get through to the next thing. And people would come in that I went to school with or had the same dreams that I had. And I was suddenly their waiter. I could never work out if it was worse when they over-tipped me or they under-tipped me, because the over-tipping, whilst the money was appreciated, it was very clear that it was a pity tip.
Yeah, charity.
Yeah. Did you ever have that experience with any of those colleagues?
Yeah, I think so. And I know exactly what you mean by that feeling. I don't think they ever really over-tipped me, though.
I think they just they felt no
they
pity
did a
for
solid
you whatsoever.
20%. Like, you did good, man. You
know, yeah, we'll just...
We'll get you what is right, you know. So I guess maybe that was the right thing to do.
Hey, Sturgill Simpson wasn't a scientist, but have you ever talked to him about his time in a lab?
No.
Because he used to, one of his early jobs was he had to dispense with samples. Like, he was the guy who all the samples for whatever they were testing, be it bleach, you know, whichever body fluid or whichever water or industrial waste or whatever. He was the guy that had to safely dispose of all of those samples, and he would just spend days and days in a hermetically sealed lab thinking about that he was getting a staph infection.
I bet.
While dreaming about being Sturgill Simpson.
Yeah.
So did you ever have a really horrible job? Was there ever anything?
Oh, yeah.
Like, what was your worst job? Was it waiting tables?
One of my worst jobs, I was working I've worked at factory jobs.
I worked at a factory. I worked on an assembly line that made drill bits for coal mines.
Dang. I worked at a Walmart distribution center, and that was a really, really intense physical job, really long hours, highly demanding, and very, very hot.
Yeah.
Like, it was almost like a full-body workout for 12 hours a day. But I also worked on a landscaping crew for quite some time, and our bathroom was a 5-gallon bucket in the back of a box truck.
Wow.
It was bungeed to the wall with two
loops
that were drilled into the wall, and it was held to the wall by a bungee.
Wow.
And,
not dissimilar to a lot of backstage toilets.
Yeah, the Porta John situation.
You must have played some venues where you thought, oh, if only I had that bucket with the bungee cord on it.
Yeah.
I'd be living the life now.
Where's that bucket?
Yeah, exactly. Hey, just before I let you go, I know this wasn't exactly your job at Mars, but you must have seen them come through with loads of test products where they were like, this is going to be our new exciting. Was there ever anything, or did you ever have any ideas for like a new fancy pants candy bar?
Well, I did have some ideas for candy bars. I didn't really want to hear them, mainly because I worked in pet food for them.
Oh, was it pet food?
Yeah, because you got to remember, Mars owns like a huge chunk of the pet food business.
Yeah.
And it's the same company, like, Mars in New Jersey and Mars in Tennessee. It's literally the same company, and they go back and forth.
I guess people don't think about it as pet food.
Yeah, so I formulated pet food for them, but we still had a lot of insight into the candy business. We still got a lot of free candy.
Good.
And I still had a lot of ideas about candy bars, and they were not interested in
what
it.
Was
like,
your, what
you
your
do pet food, dude. Don't talk to us.
Yeah,
candy.
Stay in your lane.
Yeah, bro.
Stay in your lane.
Yeah.
I've got lots of ideas for pet food now that I have a dog.
Oh, yeah.
But what was your, do you remember a candy bar idea?
I called it a naked Snickers.
So is it a Snickers without chocolate?
Yes.
See, I don't like chocolate-coated things.
Yeah, I don't really love them either.
I don't like a, you know, like a cookie or a biscuit here that's coated in milk chocolate. Don't want it. Any of those, you know, ice cream cones you get that's dipped in chocolate? No, I'm peeling that right off.
Yeah, I break it off. Yeah. Just get right to it.
Same.
Yeah. Seems like extra.
I would have bought that naked Snickers.
Like Snickers, naked. Oh, I feel like that would just, or in the nude. I don't know.
I can see how they had some sort of problem with this.
Maybe some issue.
My local McDonald's when I was growing up was a test McDonald's. And so they would send a lot of the ideas that they had to that McDonald's before they would roll them out nationally. Mm. And so we got, and I mean, I didn't know any different. I just thought this is how McDonald's worked. But we had McPizza, which they did end up rolling out, McPasta, McLobster Roll we had. They did McChinese food for a while. At this McDonald's. It was a pretty exciting time to grow up.
Y'all got McEverything.
We got McEverything.
We don't have McAnything back home.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah.
It's always a pleasure to see you.
You too, Baylen. Thank you for having me. I always enjoy talking to you.
It's always a pleasure, and I'm so, you know I love what you do, but I'm so excited to see how many other people love what you do as well. So congratulations on where you are.
Thank you, Baylen. It blows my mind every day. It's none of this was supposed to happen.
Yeah. Well, clearly it all was supposed to happen.
Yeah. Well, back to the beginning. I'm not supposed to be here, but I am. And I'm grateful for it. So.
And I'm grateful for it too.
Thank you, Baylen.
The Country Music Talk Podcast from Absolute Radio Country.
An in-depth look behind the scenes at the world of country music.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. We'll have another dropping soon for y'all, so don't forget to keep it country.
If you enjoy the Country Music Talk podcast, chances are you'll also enjoy Absolute Radio Country. It's the place where real music matters, and we love country music just as much as you do. You'll find us online on the free Absolute Radio app, on digital radio throughout the UK, or just ask your smart speaker to play Absolute Radio Country.